content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joe Austin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Legal Matters. For the next half hour, we'll explore topics you can champion your legal rights and obtain equal access and full participation in our community and achieve goals of independent living. In today's episode, our guest is Larkin Taylor Parker. Hello, Larkin. Glad to have you.
Hi. Thank you for having me on Legal Matters.
Great. We're excited about having you. And Larkin is a lawyer with Disability Rights NC. We've had several attorneys from that fine organization to be our guests in the past, and we're excited about having Larkin today. And our topic is going to be the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, and we're going to focus on Title III today. But before we get into that, Larkin, tell us a little bit about yourself and your biography and your educational background and how you came to Disability Rights NC.
So my name is Larkin Taylor Parker. I grew up here in North Carolina and have roots in both the eastern and western parts of the state. I went to college at Agnes Scott in Georgia and got my JD at UGA, and then came back here, and I've worked at DRNC ever since. I'm a person with a disability myself, so these issues are very close to my heart, and this is the work that I went to law school to do. I really enjoy my practice now, which is predominantly ADA issues under Title II and Title III, so that's the ADA as it applies to state and local government. And what we're going to focus on today, the ADA, as it applies to private entities, places of public accommodation, as well as some issues under the Rehabilitation Act and issues around guardianship and autonomy.
Wonderful. Well, how fortunate that sounds like you were able to get your dream job coming straight out of law school. Tell us about that process.
Oh, yeah. I joined DRNC as a fellow right out of law school, and it was wonderful to go into my last one or two winter exams that year, knowing that I had an offer lined up for a job I would love. And then I was hired on permanently later. If any of your listeners know of a law student or a newer attorney who is interested in disability issues, they should certainly be watching for postings. Whenever we have an opening for a fellow, we offer a two-year fellowship because public interest law is competitive, and we do want to foster people moving into this work, people who are passionate about this work, getting that first foothold. And we offer a fellowship to people right out of law school or in their first few years of practice who would like to come and work with us from time to time. So definitely those from that may be of interest should watch for when it's open.
And that good counsel, and Disability Rights NC is a force to be reckoned with in this area of the law. Larkin, tell our listeners, remind our listeners of all of the services and functions that Disability Rights NC provides.
We're a very particular kind of organization. We're North Carolina's protection and advocacy system. There's an organization like us in every U.S. state or territory, and also one for Native American nations. And our role is to protect and advocate for and advance the rights of people with disabilities, all kinds of disabilities across the lifespan, the cradle to the grave, and about the only legal issue related to disabilities that DRNC never works on is Social Security eligibility. That's the one thing that we do try to reserve our resources for, cases where people aren't necessarily going to get representation through the private market. Other than the litigation work that we do, taking individual and systemic cases and bringing them to court or bringing them through administrative proceedings, we also have an active policy team that works on all sorts of policy issues throughout North Carolina. And we have a couple of other teams that function in really unique ways, one of which goes into facilities like nursing homes, adult care homes, and those sorts of places, monitors to make sure that residents are being treated well and that the standards for those settings are being met, and investigates allegations of abuse and neglect. And our newest team is the REPTE team, and what that group within our office does is ensures that Social Security benefits are being appropriately used where the beneficiary has a representative payee, making sure that the benefits are being used to meet the beneficiary's needs and not misused or misappropriated, and that people living on Social Security will get what they need. And that is a very new function of our office. There was a wonderful initiative several years ago to create a new P&A grant. Organizations like mine are predominantly federally funded, and that grant has allowed the protection and advocacy systems, including DRNC, to take over that watchdog function and work with Social Security to ensure that benefits are being used the way they should be.
Okay. The Disability Rights NC, for our listeners, like Larkin, is made up of inspired and formidable lawyers and knowledgeable and dedicated staff. And if you ever have any legal issues that come up that deal with disability, they are the ones to call. So today, Larkin is going to talk to us about the Americans with Disabilities Act, and with special emphasis on Title III. Larkin, before we get into it, give us a little overview of the ADA. Julius Caesar's Gaul, it's divided up into three parts. So give us a little overview of the three parts of the ADA.
The ADA has more than three parts, but there are three parts that are really the most relevant and significant to people trying to live their lives day to day. And those are Titles 1, 2, and 3. 1 covers employment. 2 is about state and local government. And 3 is about all of these places in our communities that we need to go to live our lives. It's about everything from bars to grocery stores.
And you know, we've in this time of the year in the past, we've talked about, speaking of bars, we've talked about access to retail and commercial enterprises to help people do their Christmas shopping. But today, what we want to focus on, or what we're going to focus on, is access to medical care. What more, and nothing could be more important than that for independent living, I'd say. So tell us a little bit about Title III, not necessarily as it applies to the to medical access, but you can segue into that. Just talk a little bit more in detail about what Title III does for people with disabilities, and then just carry us into the as if we were driving into the parking lot and going into the doctor's office. So I give the floor and the microphone to you, Larkin.
Sure. Thank you. Unfortunately, in this time of pandemic, a lot of us have avoided as many Title III settings as we can, but people still go to the doctor. People will always need to go to the doctor. Title III is a really revolutionary civil rights statute that through public spaces, the places where people need to go to meet their basic needs, and also the places where people go to have fun and to have a rich and full life, wide open to people with disabilities in a way that they never had been before. And this includes medical settings that are not government-run. So many of the medical settings that we all encounter when we do everything from just trying to get that annual physical to needing significant medical care, a surgery, a hospital stay. Title III is the odd catch-all title of the ADA that, again, covers the situations that a person runs into in daily life. And it covers accessibility in a variety of ways. The classic thing that people think of when I bring up Title III and going out in public with a disability is basic physical access. Can someone with a physical disability or mobility impairment get in the door? But Title III in medical settings and everywhere else goes way beyond that into things like sign language interpreters, accessible signage for people who are blind, service animal access, and modifications to policies and procedures, a little extra flexibility that people can use when they need it. This is significant in medical settings because there's certainly a place where people with disabilities need to go to live long and healthy and full lives. And medical settings are one of those places where pretty much any issue that can arise under Title III can come up. From basic physical access, can people get in the door, to access for people who have sensory disabilities, which can come up in things like signage, handouts, forms, instructions that are written down, check-in kiosks that may or may not be fully accessible, service animal access, to accommodations for people who may have invisible disabilities, including more flexibility around appointment times or scheduling appointments at times of day when people may have more capacity, working with a person's loved one to manage their care, or explaining things in simple language to help somebody who may have a cognitive disability make informed decisions. All of these things come up in medical settings, and this is a very significant issue for the disability community. I have seen a lot of worrying statistics suggesting that people with disabilities end up getting worse care. and implicit bias is a significant issue in medicine, especially as to this population and many other historically marginalized groups. Title III is a great tool to overcome some of those obstacles, get people the access to care they need, and hopefully cut down on some of the lifespan disparities that we see in the disability community, even when people's conditions aren't inherently life-limiting.
One thing that I was thinking about this, and I thought of it in terms of solo and duo. And so what I want to talk first about is that solo issue. Suppose I have Ubered over to the doctor's office, and the Uber driver lets me out, and I'm coming by my lonesome. I mean, I do it all the time. In terms of assistance, barriers, what can I expect from, or what have I got a right to expect from the doctor when I come in by myself, and with, you know, maybe a manifest disability, and you know they're kind of perplexed about what to do. What can I expect, and what can I very diplomatically demand of the doctor's office if I come in solo like that?
Well, there are two major things that are important in medical settings that Title III and its enacting regulations afford to people with disabilities in medical settings. And the first is reasonable accommodation. People with disabilities are entitled to reasonable accommodations in these privately run public places, such as a lot of medical settings. And what that means is the medical setting may have to make changes to afford someone its services. And it's obligated to support people in using its services and to make changes that will facilitate equal access for people with disabilities, provided that those changes are not an undue burden or a fundamental alteration. An undue burden is going to be something that is just, generally it's going to be something that's just hopelessly expensive. And what constitutes an undue burden is going to depend on the size and scale and the budget of the healthcare entity. More is going to be expected of a massive healthcare system than a much smaller entity. Fundamental alteration is about whether the person with a disability is asking for access to the services that are being offered, or something completely different than what is being offered. And the classic example is a person with a disability might be entitled to accommodations like priority scheduling for afternoon appointments if their medication makes them foggy headed in the morning, or printed documents like forms and handouts with doctor's instructions and bills in an accessible format. An adult with a disability is not entitled to demand to see a pediatrician as an accommodation, because that's a completely different service than the pediatrician is even in business offering. So what Title III protects is access to the services that are on offer, not things that would fundamentally alter the nature of those services. Title III entities may also deny service when the person with a disability would pose a direct threat to others, but only when that direct threat can't be mitigated with reasonable accommodations. And those situations are going to be vanishingly rare, very few and far between. So when a person with a disability arrives in a medical setting, it's going to come down to what the individual needs. The ADA on the whole, and Title III in particular, really focus on an individualized analysis. What does this person need in this situation? So someone who goes to the doctor can demand to be dealt with as an individual. There should not be broad rules for people with specific types of disabilities generally. Instead, there should be a focus on what does this person need and how do we meet that need.
Let me interject a question there. You were on a roll, but let me ask. So I've showed up solo, and the doctor says, or the doctor's nurse says, well, you know, our halls are serpentine and labyrinthine, and oh no, you can't come in by yourself. If you're visually impaired, you have to have a chaperone. You have to have. Can they do that?
That would be completely unacceptable. Now, somebody might require accommodations if they were blind or had low vision and routes through a building were really weird and convoluted and confusing. And we do see that in a lot of big hospitals. I've had to walk through some of the local ones, and even as a sighted person, I remember having a meeting at a big hospital once, and they were so sure that we would get lost that they just sent people down to meet us and lead us to the conference room. So that's a real issue, but that issue can be addressed through reasonable accommodations, and Title III generally requires the covered entity, the Title III entity, the public place, to provide the reasonable accommodations, not the person with a disability. So while requiring a person with a disability to bring a chaperone and provide their own accommodation would not be acceptable, the better solution would be accessible signage to help someone who is blind or low vision get around the building, find their way on their own, or maybe having a staff member walk them to their appointment room and tell them where to go. The idea of the ADA and our other disability-related civil rights statutes is to not put the entire effort of getting by in the world on the person with a disability, but instead ask the world to meet people with disabilities halfway by providing accessibility measures instead of always forcing someone to bring a guide to get around the building or an interpreter to interpret back and forth between ASL and English, or a friend to help transfer from a wheelchair to an exam table. Those are the sorts of things that a Title III entity needs to provide as reasonable accommodations.
Well, Larkin, that is, you've given us a huge amount of very useful information. And we haven't run out of time, but we're going to run out of time pretty quick. Do you think you could come back next month and maybe do a part two of Title III? Because you got a wealth of information and knowledge that would be helpful to everybody. Assuming we can schedule it and you can schedule it, will you come back next month and do a part two of Title III ADA?
Putting I'll you on the spot. I'll have to check my calendar, but I assume that'll be fine.
Great. Well, we'll work it out. We'll accommodate you. because we want you to come back. You have a lot of helpful, useful information, which is de rigueur for the lawyers and our guests from Disability Rights NC. You know, a lot of times people will ask you for, as a icebreaker, what would people be most surprised to know about you? And I think I read this right, that on your bio that's published by Disability Rights, is it the case that you are a tuba player?
I am. That is something I've done since I was 12 years old. I learned in North Carolina public schools, and it's something I've stuck with, and I think I'll continue to really enjoy throughout my life.
Well, good for you. You know, the tuba is a much maligned instrument. It can actually be played with great subtlety, and I'm sure you can play in all modes of that. That's wonderful, and music, wonderful avocation, and a wonderful hobby to have. So anyway, that is an interesting fact. So I guess you played in high school and in college.
I did, and I didn't play very much for my college, just a little bit. I went to a small women's college that didn't have a marching band, but I was a street musician in Atlanta throughout most of college, and that was a great experience.
A tuba player on the street. Now, I'd like to hear that. So work up some Christmas carols, and I'll get my saxophone, and maybe we can do a duo out on Fayetteville Street. But, well, Larkin, thanks so much for being our guest today. You've been delightful and informational, and we're going to work it out for you to come back next month. We're going to make sure we can fit you in, fit your schedule. And, well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Legal Matters. Our guest was Larkin Taylor Parker from Disability Rights NC. Thank you, Larkin.
Thank you.
And we hope you've enjoyed the show and discovered information about your legal rights to obtain equal access and full participation in our community. I'm Joe Austin for the North Carolina Reading Service. Content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. We're available on podcast at our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions, call us at 919-832-5138. And we thank you for listening to Legal Matters, and hope everybody has a wonderful Thanksgiving. This is the North Carolina Reading Service. Thanks so much.